But for my nefarious intentions, what I'd really like folks to get out of this presentation is definitely not a detailed description of the different payment certifications and practices, but rather more of an awareness, a consciousness, a thoughtfulness of the legion of certifications and compliance standards that exist in the payments industry. In my tenure in the payments industry, somewhat similar to Aiden, as he was saying, documentation, documentation, documentation. Perhaps the least sexiest thing about any project in the payments industry is testing and certification. However, it is always the gotcha, especially when we bias the conversation towards EMV. And again, Aiden had a great slide in there where it went from development, testing, certification to development, testing, and certification again. So this slide deck is just to go over some of the standards bodies and try to consider when you're making your project plans, when you're making your next greatest widget plan to release into the market, to consider the number of certifications and testing that you should implement into your schedules. If we look at the ecosystem of the payment processing area, obviously you need to understand where you are in that ecosystem. Am I perhaps producing a card or a mobile device with a secure element? By the way, that chip and secure element are the same thing. So maybe I'm in card production. I need to worry about my certifications for card production. Perhaps I'm a terminal vendor, like Randy here from Verifone, and I need to worry about getting my EMV level 1 certifications, EMV level 2 certifications. If I'm accepting PIN, I need to worry about PCI, PIN transaction security, or PTS. Perhaps I'm an acquirer who's also doing PIN translation, so now I come under the umbrella of PCI PIN. And how do I manage my keys and how do I manage the translations of those pins for the back-end networks? And maybe I'm a retailer that has all of these elements with under your one roof. So now you need to worry about, as a retailer, do I have a device that's been properly certified by PCI and EMV Co. if I'm accepting EMV cards? Is the acquirer processor that I'm contracted with, have they been properly certified by PCI to handle my cardholders' PIN data that's coming through them? Is my entire system compliant with PCI DSS standards, which is a compliance, not a certification? Furthermore, do I want to take it a step further as a retailer and have my entire POS application, my entire system payment application certified, that's the PADSS, so I can come under an additional umbrella, an additional wrapper of a thing called PCI point-to-point encryption? Then further outside of that scope, perhaps you're an issuer or an issuer processor who's interested in converting over to EMV. What sort of new certifications do I have to worry about now that I'm going from Magstripe over to EMV? And lastly, perhaps maybe I'm an HSM producer or someone who is producing a secure hardware device where crypto management and key management can be safely done. And again, I fall under a number of different certifications and standards by. So you have to consider where your widget or service is within the payments ecosystem. As a baseline of what we're talking about and why there's so many different standards and so many different compliance and certification standards in the industry, boils down to a trust, something that we probably as cardholders don't think about much. When we walk into the grocery store, we assume we walk into that grocery store. The grocery store has a symbol of a particular payment brand. You say, hey, I've got a card with that brand on it. I expect as a cardholder to be able to use this to exchange it for goods and services. I believe that you as the merchant are going to take that card sensitive data and protect it securely through your systems and deliver it securely off to the networks and off to the issuers. If I'm the merchant, I have a trust that that branded payment device that you gave me, that card or that phone or that fob, will be legitimate, will be authentic. And if I send that data securely to the financial issuer from whence the device came, that if they say it's accepted, that I as a merchant will get paid later in the day or later in the week for the goods and services I provided to the cardholder. So all the standards and these payments, certifications are all wrapping around the idea that there's a belief that commerce can be safely and securely obtained, and I can trust my data is going to be secure. So if we look at some of the names that you should be familiar with within the payments industry, everyone, I think, has probably heard of PCI. They're also the Security Standards Council. There's a lot of different layers to that onion of things that are certifications and also things that are compliance standards, of which there is no certification, but there are recommendations of how to be compliant. EMV, of course, that's why we're all here. I believe Umesh started it off with this, was originally Europay, MasterCard, and Visa. It's morphed into a number of other members now that are MasterCard, Visa, Amex, Discover, JCP, and UnionPay. ISO, International Standards Organization. So when you hear Aiden say ISO 7816, or somebody say ISO 18092, or something like that, that's the standards body for those compliance standards. ANSI, also very common in the payments industry. And once in a while, you'll also hear FIPS, which does not stand for the American National Standards Institute. Rather, it stands for Federal Information Processing Standards. So that's a copy-paste error on my file. So if we look at the world that we're used to today in the magstripe world in the United States, there are authentication methods that help enable that trust for the payment to occur, right? You have a cardholder, or you're a cardholder, you go to a merchant. You can authenticate yourself to that merchant by using your signature, which we can debate whether or not that's a terribly secure way to authenticate somebody. Or perhaps more securely, you can enter a PIN if you're doing a debit type transaction, and that will authenticate that you are you, hopefully. And then lastly, the card, which shouldn't have a chip on it in this case. However, the card can be authenticated by the financial issuer who issued the card by way of a thing called a security code, and the different brands have different acronyms for it, CVC, CIC. But it's all for a verification code to help validate that the card is real. So in the Magstripe world today, we have signature and PIN to validate that the cardholder is authentic, and we have CVC to authenticate that the card is real. In the EMV world to which we are migrating, that authentication goes up exponentially. Why? Because the EMV co-standards are an authentication standards, not a security standards. They don't try to hide stuff, but they do try to authenticate a bunch of stuff. In this case, in the EMV world, we still have our traditional signature to authenticate the cardholder, or we have an online PIN, which will go to the financial institution to authenticate the cardholder. We have two different flavors of offline PIN, for which the card can validate the cardholder is real by way of the PIN, and what we don't have up here is my favorite, which is no CVM, which you might run into in an unattended kiosk or an unattended parking facility. So that's cardholder verification. If you remember back in the Magstripe world, all we had was this hard-coded number that's either on the Magstripe or what's printed on the front or back of the card for CVC. In this case, now we have ways that the terminal, the PIN entry device or the POS device, can authenticate the card using different methods of offline data authentication known as SDA, DDA, and CDA, going from least to most secure in that order. And then finally, one of the cooler things about EMV, especially if you're going online, is that the card can also authenticate that the issuer is real. So now when the card goes online and it generates an ARQC to say, hey, I'm the only one who could generate this cryptogram, and the financial institution says, yep, that's you, the financial institution can optionally also generate its own cryptogram that gets sent back to the card. So the card can say, yep, that's the bank that made me, and know that it's not some middleman with a laptop on there that's acting as a financial institution and approving the transaction erroneously. The other thing to take away from this graph is to understand that this graphic encompasses the EMV standards in a very global and a very generic way. These are all the possible things that can be done. However, if you're migrating to EMV, be you an issuer or card production or a retailer or an acquirer, you need to, again, as Aiden said, collect your documentation, especially from the brands, because the implementation that you're going to do is going to be influenced by how the brands feel EMV should be implemented for a given customer, for a given region. And by the way, there could also be regional constraints, like in Canada, you also have Interact standards. We don't have an organization like that in the U.S. heretofore, but you need to be aware of, if I'm going to go into Canada, there's also Interact, along with all the other brands that I need to be concerned with. So this is everything you might be able to do with Contact EMV, but be aware that the brands and your acquirer are going to have an opinion on how you should actually implement. For example, SDA, which is the first data authentication method, is pretty much out of vogue now for everybody. So bias towards EMV, because we're an EMV conference, and we're biased towards EMV. It all starts with the chip on the card, right? The whole crux of EMV being an authentication standard is the belief that this chip, which is a computer, it's got ROM and RAM in there, it's got a CPU, it's running an application. The belief that this is secure, it is hard to be cloned, and it can cryptographically create unique authentication data per transaction. That's the crux of it. Are there standards around it? Yes, they are. There's the ISO 7816, of which EMV is based in that, and then brands will put their applications on top of that EMV standard. If you were to look at the chip without a actual picture of the ROM and RAM and the wires there, it has everything that a computer has, save for a keyboard and a display. Right, it's got I/O logic to talk to the terminal, it's got RAM, it's got ROM, it's got an EEPROM, it's got a processor on it, it's got an operating system of some type, it's got an application, which is usually per brand, and then on top of that it's got some sort of configuration. I am running M-Chip Advanced, and I'm using the MasterCard AID A00000410, something like that. The important thing to take out of this, and for some reason it still doesn't seem to quite sink in, that we are talking about a whole new computer. So again, I refer to Aiden's slide where it goes from Magstripe to EMV. It's because we've added an entirely new computer into the whole mix of stuff. Let's see. One of the considerations is hardware security versus software security. If I'm a terminal vendor like a Verifone or Ingenico, and I'm accepting PIN, I'm going to be concerned about making sure my device has been certified by PCI PIN. Perhaps I'm the maker of an HSM or an ATM. Perhaps I'm the maker of some new VAR widget out there that's accepting card devices. I need to be aware of my hardware certifications. PIN is always a big topic in the U.S., and for PIN, PCI has the PIN transaction security standards. So it makes sure that your device is secure, that you hold your keys securely, that you use a strong form of cryptography, and that data, that PIN that you're storing, can be transferred securely through the system back to the financial issuer. And perhaps a token is returned or something like that. But making sure your device and the security of the way you wrap that PIN is safe. Another player that I sort of picked at random is what I'll call an ISO processor, a issuer processor, which if you're a smaller financial bank, you might hire a third-party issuer processor to do all the sort of heavy lifting and computing for you on day-to-day. This is an actual boiled down sketch of an actual customer that we had that was migrating over to EMV. So they were a Magstripe issuing processor. They were moving over to EMV processing, and suddenly their whole world kind of blew up, because what they used to have is essentially on the right side an authorization server, of which many networks would come in and they could authorize that the PIN was valid for a debit transaction, say, or that the CVC was valid, and they'd send the information back to the networks. When EMV came into their world, suddenly they had a whole new key management challenge, of which there's a lot, and you hear some of the payment brands talk about easier implementations of EMV, where we don't do a bunch of offline data authentication, so it lowers your key management, because key management jumps way up when you're talking about EMV, and if you're going to support a full robust EMV with CDA and DDA, then you're going to have a whole bunch of key management hurdles that you need to consider. So in the center there is their KMS, their key management system. It talks to their card management system, which is legacy from their Magstripe days. The KMS combines that card data with EMV data, creates a Perso file, so it goes out to Perso. They also need a connection to their card production facilities and their card production stock and their OS. And then all those little black boxes in between are what we call zone keys. So all of the data traveling between these systems is sensitive. It needs to be protected by a zone key. And again, this is sort of a simplified version of what the architecture and issuer processor looks like. But to be aware, this issuer processor now migrating to EMV has to be concerned about all of those different security standards to some degree or less. And lastly, again, from a software standpoint, if I'm a payment application, if I'm a retailer that's interested in doing PCI point-to-point encryption standards, then I might be interested in PADSS. If I'm a card producer, if I'm an issuer, if I'm an acquirer, if I'm a retailer, I want to be concerned about PCI DSS compliance, not a certification, but it's a compliance standard. And then perhaps end-to-end security, which Aiden fielded a question on. How do I take my EMV migration and marry it to or sync it with PCI standards and certification so that I'm not only authenticating the cardholder, the card, the financial institution, but I'm also protecting that card data from the point of interaction all the way to the financial issuer and back. And that's end-to-end system security. And again, as Aiden pointed out, have a discussion with your processor and their recommended standards.
There was a question around the PCI certification. Does that come before EMV certification?
Holy cow. Well, so the PCI is an onion. There's stuff like PCI PTS, which is a certification. You can actually go and see listings of it on the PCI website. There's stuff called PCI PADSS, which is also certification. There are compliance standards, such as PCI DSS, which gets most of the headlines. There's things called PCI SRED. So again, you have to understand where you are in the ecosystem. Am I a card producer? Am I a PIN handler? Am I a retailer? And then the number of PCI certifications or compliance standards that you need to live up to, you can figure it out from there. So it's not, I wouldn't call it a before or an after sort of thing. You need to understand which compliance standards and certification standards are in scope for me, for what I'm doing. And then is EMV level one, EMV level two, something that I need to worry about. And what we didn't even touch on is stuff called end-to-end certifications, which is what you do with your acquirer. Because even if I have a Verifone terminal with level one and level two certifications, I still need to, as a retailer or an acquirer, get brand certifications on top of that, which is also known as level three EMV certifications.
So they should contact their acquirer too.
They need to know their place in the ecosystem and do some homework. But is there one goes before the other? Probably not.